Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Yo, what's good? It's Black Trey, and I got a show called Growing Up the Same with Jason Madison, where we talk to guests about their childhood memories that I'm sure everyone can relate to. You even get some life advice at the end. Our show has featured guests like Dom Kennedy, JJ Redick, Baron Davis, Brian Koppelman, Bomani Jones, Mina Kimes, and many more. Be sure to check us out on the Black Opinions Matter feed under the Count the Dings Network. Oh yeah, and don't forget to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe, rate, and review.
And also subscribe, rate, and review to the separate Growing Up the Same feed.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of Woke Worlds, of course. I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wosni Labre. We talking about Haiti today, so you know I had to go with the Haitian pronunciation, Nando. Joined, as always, by my brother and my partner out on the west side of Los Angeles, Fernando Vila. What's going on, brother, man?
Doing well, doing well. You know, just recording this right before I head off to Spain on vacation. So I'll be going to Spain for
Huepa. Do Spanish people say huepa? Yeah. Or is that just Puerto Ricans?
No, that's Puerto Ricans. Yeah. Spanish
people don't say that shit. No. On today, salute to my man Rob Lopez. On today's show, we're going to talk about the attempted coup out in Haiti. That's just a fucking insane, crazy, ridiculous story. So we're going to get into that. But first, man, there's a lot of protests going on in Cuba. The people are protesting a lack of food, lack of resources, lack of everything, medical supplies, medical care. They're just suffering over there in Cuba under the weight of an authoritarian regime, a freaking 62-year U.S. embargo that has deprived the country of resources and starved these people out for no freaking reason. Of course, if you turn on your local, not your local, but your national news, if you're local in Miami, you already know the vibes. They talking regime change. They talking revolution. They talking U.S. intervention. That goes without saying from the expat community. But, you know, if you turn on your MSNBCs, your CNNs, your Democratic Party leaders, your Republican Party leaders, it's a condemnation of the Castro family regime. It's, yo, these guys, it's, you know, grassroots. We need to support the grassroots movement. It's a lot of chatter, Nando. So, you know, yeah. I'm interested to hear how you felt about it when you first heard about the protests and your reaction to sort of the discourse here in America, in the mainstream anyway.
I mean, you know, you could predict right away what the discourse was going to be like. It was going to be just a zero acknowledgement of the effects of the U.S. embargo on the suffering of the Cuban people and a total blaming of the regime and the system as to the suffering of the Cuban people. And that, you know what, it's like they need to go. I mean, it was just remarkable because the tenor of the coverage this time has been even more insane than usual, because we're seeing guys like the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, coming out and actively calling for the bombing of Cuba by the United States. Wow. You know, I just sent producer Sean the link. Maybe he could throw it up if that's possible. But it's just a wild thing to see. The mayor of Miami, a Cuban American named Francis Suarez, goes on Fox News and he says, you know, we need to do like a military coalition, and, you know, like, getting in, like, we, you know, we've done it in the past, like in other countries, like in Panama and like in Kosovo. And like, I'm just saying, like, we need a military coalition to, you know, like, and the host's like, wait a minute. Are you advocating for like airstrikes on Cuba? It's like, I think we need to like discuss all the options on the table, you know, like, and listen, I think that any conversation in the United States that doesn't begin and end with the United States ending its undeclared war on Cuba that has lasted since 1959 and continues through this very day through vicious economic sanctions, which impoverish and starve the Cuban people.
Nando, because we always hear about the sanctions, can you walk people through like as quickly as you can so we don't get bogged down in it, but like walk people through what it means that Cuba is sanctioned by the United States. Like practically, what does it mean?
It means basically that it just affects in a negative way Cuba's domestic economy. If the most powerful nation in the world, the largest economy in the world, the nation that essentially controls international trade and commerce, basically refuses to do business with the Cuban government or anyone in Cuba for that matter, and also actively makes it hard for anyone outside in the rest of the world to do business with Cuba. I mean, think about this. The Trump administration designated Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism. Okay. Now, imagine if you're a company and based anywhere, and you're thinking about doing business in Cuba whilst the United States has them designated as a state sponsor of terrorism. Are you going to do business with that government? No, it's not worth it.
I need America as a business ally way more than I need Cuba. So sorry, you're going to get the short end of the stick, Cuban people.
Exactly. So the specific aim of the Cuban embargo, the sanctions on Cuba, which is the same thing with the sanctions in Venezuela and the sanctions in Iran, is to impoverish and starve the local population so much that they rise up and overthrow their governments. Think about how cruel that is. It's to starve people into forcing them into, you know, destabilizing their own governments. It's vicious, and it's economic warfare, which is on top of the actual warfare that the United States has done in Cuba for many, many years. You know, as soon as the Castro regime took over in a revolution in 1959, the American government did bombings in Cuba, terrorist attacks in Cuba, airplane hijackings in Cuba, all manner of actual violence towards Cuba, not to mention the Bay of Pigs invasion, you know, and all manner of terrorist campaigns, you know, by using like right-wing death squads from Central America, all manner of violence toward the Cuban regime. So any conversation in the United States that doesn't begin and end with the United States must end the embargo on Cuba immediately if you care about at all about the suffering of the Cuban people, which is fair. Like the you know, Cuba right now is struggling. Why? Because there's been a global pandemic. And what is Cuba's main export to the world? Tourism. During a global pandemic, you can't do tourism. So, you know, there is a big economic downturn in Cuba. They actually just also just had a big hurricane pass through there. So, you know, if the largest, most powerful nation in the history of the world, the largest economy in the world, is putting an economic stranglehold over a small, poor Caribbean island, it's going to suffer. I mean, the fact is that the fact that Cuba isn't as bad as, say, Haiti or the Dominican Republic or other, even Puerto Rico, in many ways, is a goddamn miracle, because those countries are client states of the United States. In the case of Puerto Rico, it's an outright colony of the United States. And those countries are suffering far more than
Hold on, Nando. You're such a damn hippy dippy pie in the sky, limp wrist, leftist, liberal, hippie idiot. You don't even mention the brutal death squads and the killing regime of the Castro family. These guys have killed, tortured, imprisoned their citizens. There's no free press. There's no freedoms in the country. These people are living under the boot of a freaking crazy authoritarian regime. And it's evil what the Castro family has done. Why aren't you talking about that, Nando?
I'm happy to talk about it, but I have very little, like, the affairs of Cuba are up for the Cubans to decide. You know, like I as an American, and, you know, doing media in America, you know, speaking to other Americans, I can somewhat influence the affairs of my government and what the government that I am a part of and that I am a citizen to and that I vote for is basically putting the boot on a small, poor island nation and has been doing it for decades. And if we actually are serious about the suffering of the Cuban people, that's step one. This is like step one to any serious discussion about Cuba has to begin and end with the embargo. You know, the Castro regime is, I mean, I'm not saying like I would like to live under, you know, that kind of government or anything like that. But the reality is that, like, that is up to the Cubans to decide. You know, that is up to the Cubans to decide, and not for us to put the noose around their neck and then a gun toward their head and then say, like, now decide, you know. That's what drives me crazy about this, is that, like, the number one factor of the suffering of the Cuban people is the United States embargo. And what you hear from a lot of Cubans in Miami, and even a lot of, like, progressive Cubans, is like, no, it's not the embargo that's the reason why. Like, oh no, the embargo is, like, not even a big deal, you know. Oh, it's not the embargo, it's the regime. The embargo doesn't matter. It's like, oh, if the embargo doesn't matter, then let's lift it.
Right.
Then why don't we lift it? You know, if the embargo was this thing that didn't matter, then we would just lift it.
Well, you hear people say things like, well, the regime would just hoard the resources, or I don't know. I it's hard, like, because you only get one, I've only ever, my whole life, ever gotten one version of events in Cuba, and that's Castro kicked my well-to-do family out. Now he has the citizens in there living in squalor. People have died in the Atlantic Ocean, drowned trying to escape from that fucking place. And he's just a horrible person. If it was so great what he was doing over there, why are people dying, risking life and limb to get the hell out of Dodge in Cuba? He's evil. He's horrible. He's our Hitler. X, Y, and Z. It goes on and on and on. That's the only version of events that I've ever been privy to as an American, as it pertains to, you know, the facts on the ground in Cuba.
I mean, Cuba is a poor nation. Like, Cuba is poor. Like, you know, just as there are, like, you're from Haiti. Haiti's very poor. There's tons of Haitians, you know, getting on boats and coming to the United States 100%, as well. Yeah. You know, like, and so Cuba is not as poor as Haiti. Haiti is much poorer, but you know, Cuba is a poor nation. But I want to play the clip of the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez. Producer Sean has it up because I think it really captures, you know, the tone of a lot of the Cuban Americans that exist in Miami and just how much they care about the suffering of the Cuban people. Let's play the clip.
A repressive government and a cruel U.S. embargo. They deserve policies that empower them and help them improve their lives. Do you think that President Biden, looking at this situation, will lift that embargo? And do you think that's what he should do?
No, I don't think the embargo is cruel at all. And I think that the Cuban people are not asking for a lifting of the embargo. They're going out on the streets every single day talking about the failure of the communist regime to provide for its people. And I don't understand why that's so difficult for people to understand. It has failed for 6 decades. And what should be being contemplated right now is a coalition, a potential military action in Cuba, similar to what has happened in both administrations, in both Republican and Democrat administrations. In Republican with Bush in Panama, they deposed Noriega, and that country had peaceful democracy for decades. And you had interventions by Democratic presidents, you know, taking out Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. It's a sovereign country where they took out a terrorist that probably saved thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives. And President Clinton in Kosovo intervening in a humanitarian issue with airstrikes. So there have been many, many opportunities in the history.
Are you suggesting airstrikes in Cuba?
What I'm suggesting is that that option is one that has to be explored and cannot be just simply discarded as an option that is not on the table. And there's a variety of ways the military can do it, but that's something that needs to be discussed and needs to be looked at as a potential option, in addition to a variety of other options that can be discussed.
Yeah. Man, you know what's so funny about that, Nando? It's amazing. Is the synergy between Haiti and Cuba, in the sense that the Haitians in 1804, they finally defeat France after like a 10 to 12 year war, and they declare themselves an independent nation, and the United States and, you know, basically all of the European powers say, we're not going to recognize them as a country. And so anybody who's doing business with us also isn't going to recognize them as a country. We're going to completely rob them and shut them out. And when we finally do recognize them, we're going to tell them that they owe France reparation for no longer allowing them to be a slave colony.
Squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break down around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Nothing. I was just tired. I'm just stressed a little bit. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. And if you do...
Hey, listener. Zach Harper here from Cinephobe. Yeah, that podcast. It's a good one. Ascertain. Telling you right now, Prize Picks, that's the way to go. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million members. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS is just you against the numbers. You pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. It's demon time. That's right. You're asking, what does that mean? It's demon time. I'll tell you. Demons and Goblins, the newest and most exciting way to play at Prize Picks. Squares marked with red demons or green goblins get you different payouts. You can now win up to 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. That's insane. That's insane of Prize Picks to do. You know what else is insane? They offer injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you and the rest of your entry stays alive. Prize Picks is the only DFS platform with an injury insurance policy. And by the way, they now offer Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. This football, basketball, any season you're playing. Me personally, I'm taking more than points on Joel Embiid all the time. I'm taking more than assists on Tyrese Halliburton. I'm taking less than points on Jordan Poole. Those seem to be the easy money makers for you. And you're probably wondering, Zach, how do I get involved in this? You go to prizepicks.com/ding and use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/ding. Use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hello, listener. Have you ever used ButcherBox? I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to be a butcher. I used to work at an unnamed grocery store. I used to be that tall man behind the counter in your neighborhood, cutting up meat and preparing seafood for you. And I know that it can be a stressful situation. I know that it can be crowded. You have to wait your turn. You have to know what you want. You feel rushed. Sometimes you might think that your butcher has a bad attitude. I don't know. Happened to a friend. Couldn't possibly be me. But that's why I love ButcherBox. ButcherBox brings you peace of mind. You can easily find high quality beef, chicken, pork that you can trust is humanely raised. There's no antibiotics or added hormones. There's the ultimate convenience of not having to deal with butchers or the crowded meat counter after a long day at work. It's delivered right to your doorstep. There's always free shipping and there's incredible value. You're getting really high quality products at an amazing value. You get exclusive member deals. You get recipe inspiration, guides, hacks. A little hack from my butcher experience, the petite top sirloin, which is about half the price of the New York steak, is a very similar cut with a fat cap on one side, and you get very good tenderness out of the petite sirloin. If you've ever been to a Brazilian steakhouse and you see them talking about picanha, that's the petite sirloin. With ButcherBox, I'm always prepared. I always have meat on deck for a grill and chill, a cookout, or just making dinner at home. And I'm saving a ton of money from shopping at the grocery store all the time. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's great, but what's my reward for signing up for ButcherBox? Well, I'm glad you asked, because if you sign up at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, you will get free ground beef for life. For life. Enough ground beef to fill the Nile, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/dings.
You'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, if you get started today, you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatment.
Right.
And which they paid.
Right. Which they paid and starved the nation out and set it on this course of perpetual poverty and misery and all of this kind of stuff. And people say, well, you know, why can't the Haitians get their affairs in order? Why can't they be like the Trinidads? Why can't they be like the Jamaicas of the world? Why can't they be like Barbados? It's like, well, those countries weren't formed under the same circumstances, right? And, you know,
Haiti was an existential threat to 100%. The United States, because it's the only ever successful slave revolt, you know, and that just couldn't, they couldn't allow that to succeed because you had a bunch of slaves in the United States that would have been like, bad. Yo, yeah.
Just marketing as a slave operation. Like, just be like, yeah, no, this is cool. This can stand. It's like, no, it can't. Like, and you know, and just the news, they were so paranoid about just the news getting out that successfully slaves had overthrown the fucking mighty French Like that was just a non-starter for those guys back then. But yeah, no, I see the synergy there in the sense that the United States deciding we're not going to fuck with you. We're going to starve you out. And we can do that because we are just fucking all powerful. And the negative effects that it can have on a nation. And this idea that this fool would go on TV and says they're not asking for the end of the embargo. What do you think would happen from other people opening business in Cuba? Like, what are you talking about?
The history of Cuba. Yeah, the history of Cuba is important to understand. And that in the Cuba was first colonized by the Spanish, my people. They ran Cuba as a brutal colonizing, occupying nation for hundreds of years. It was actually Spain's last colony, and it was the crown jewel in the Spanish Empire. Cuba was the most important colony. Cuba controls the Caribbean. I mean, access to Cuba is access to the Caribbean, which, because of the way the trade winds go, is the most important, kind of part of the New World when it comes to trade. The Spaniards lose Cuba after the War of 1898, the Spanish-American War, which was provoked by the United States. And then the United States essentially took over Cuba. They took over Puerto Rico and Philippines, which were other Spanish colonies, as outright colonies. And then Cuba as a sort of de facto colony. It wasn't technically run by the United States, but it was run by the United States. And then we've all seen Godfather 2. It was essentially run by American capital in alliance with the mafia. The Cubans, like the Cuban people, when they kind of rose up in 1959 and deposed the dictator Batista, you have to see it as really kind of a war for independence. It wasn't just a toppling of a dictator, but really it was a war of independence from the United States. And when you see it in those terms,
hold on, I want to ask you before you go on, Nando, before we go on, because I think it's important to know, like, who was Cuba working for? What Cuban citizens was Cuba working the way that you wanted it to work back in 1950s? Like, who were obviously there were Cubans who liked the way that it was before Castro came along. They wouldn't be still bitching about it in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, it was the elite that kind of was left over from the Spanish colonial rule. There was a business elite and a sort of educated kind of professional elite. There was, lawyers and doctors and things like that, but there was also just kind of like the bigger capitalists, people that worked very closely with the regime, as well as with the, organized crime interests in the United States and large corporate interests in the United States. I mean, there was a Cuban elite that was living, a very nice life. Cuba is a beautiful place. But there was this mass of incredibly poor and oppressed people, especially in the countryside.
Were there?
Things like that.
Were there?
There were.
You never hear about that in the mainstream. Yeah.
And so if you understand that war as a war of independence from the United States, you can see why the virulent sort of response from the United States starts to make a lot more sense, because there's war from there's people that topple regimes all over the place, but none have held kind of such a hold over the American kind of imagination as Cuba does.
Really, it's Cuba and Iran. Those are the two that just still sticks in their fucking craws.
It's because they beat us. I mean, it was Iran. I mean, people don't realize Iran fucking killed 300 Marines in Beirut, like working with Hezbollah. Like Iran kicked out the Shah in a revolution, a Shah that was controlled by the United States, and the people rose up and kicked him out. And Iran was essentially a kind of neo-colony of the United States as well, from 1953 to 1979, when the CIA deposed the democratically elected leader of Iran, a guy named Mossadegh. Once the United States doesn't like to lose those neo colonies, they don't like to lose it. They don't like it when the people rise up and take their country back. The nature of the Iran regime is one that I don't like as well. It's a kind of like a religious fundamentalist regime, but it does have, and it has had over the years, especially in the early days, the support of the vast majority of the people in Iran. Mm-hmm. And it's just not our business to decide their affairs at all. you know, but the United States has had a hard on for Iran since then. Because they kicked our ass. I mean, that's just what it is. They
also,
like, don't forget
also,
that shit.
I love that you could see the results of Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and think to yourself, that's what I think the Cuban people deserve. That.
Yeah, just fucking bomb, you know, like just a fucking bombing campaign.
Not Iran, I meant to say Libya. Like, Libya. No, that's what we want for the people of Cuba. We want what happened in Libya. We want what happened in Iraq. We want ISIS. We want a power vacuum to emerge. Yeah. And we want a civil war. That's what the Cuban people deserve, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's great. No, you love to see it. But it's just, I mean, this is what I don't, this is what frustrates me. And I know a bunch of, like, you know, even like progressive Cubans who I'm friends with and I like, and you know, I can empathize with their feeling of like, well, look, something has to be done. And it's like what has to be done? Like, what are the policy options available to Joe Biden? We're already doing like brutal economic sanctions on Cuba. Like, we can't, like, what's the next step
an
is
invasion.
What? An invasion, you know? And like, with regard to the embargo, I think it's worth pointing out that the United States is completely isolated in the world on this issue. Like, I think it was last month or the month before, there was a UN vote on the embargo. Every single country in the world, except for the United States and Israel, voted to end the embargo. There was, I think, 3 or 4 abstentions. So there was, everyone said yes. The United States and Israel said no. And I think there was 3 abstentions. One was Colombia, Iván Duque, like extreme right-wing maniac, Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro, and Ukraine were the 3 countries who abstained. Even though, like, even the absurd, like, insane right-wing maniac Jair Bolsonaro couldn't bring himself to vote no, you know, they just abstained. The only countries were the United States and Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, who voted no.
Right.
The embargo is recognized by the entire world, okay, as a morally obscene act of economic warfare that the United States is doing. Again, any conversation in the United States about, like, what to do in Cuba begins and ends with ending the embargo. There is literally nothing else we should do. You know, there is nothing else that the United States should do in Cuba. You know, if then Cubans will, you know, handle their own affairs in however they see fit. But we just don't have the moral right, the practical right, the practical mechanism to do anything. Like, say you think the regime is awful. Like, let's grant that. You know, what is to be done about it? The answer is lift the embargo. Yeah.
So I that's mean, that. And so we move on to Haiti, where last week, I think it was on Wednesday morning, the president had been assassinated, President Jovenel, and his wife had been shot. Luckily, she survived her wounds. So much has come out since last week. We didn't do it last week because it was like, bro, we don't know anything. But the more I started reading, the more I started listening to radio programs, the more it became obvious that this was a rift between the ruling class oligarchs of Haiti. These people have dominated the country for decades, right? It's a small amount of elites who hoard the resources, who, yeah, when the Clintons want to come in there and build some type of resort or do whatever, they're doing it in concert with the elites. When the aid money comes in, it's the elites in charge of disseminating it. When it comes to roads being built, indoor plumbing, et cetera, it's only their neighborhoods that are getting taken care of. These people have essentially ruled the country for decades, right? And again, the part that people need to understand, this is with the tacit approval of the United States government. Nothing happens in Haiti without the United States government being directly involved in it. There was a legitimate popular uprising with Aristide in the 90s. Like, that was legitimate left-wing uprising. Like, these dudes did this shit in secret. There was a fucking conspiracy.
It's a crazy story.
It's crazy. Like, that was a legitimate populist groundswell. Like, they were literally having secret meetings about it. Like, literally.
In the ghettos, yeah.
Yes. And so, yeah. And but even Aristide, of course, you know, you get in that position, he gets corrupted and everything that happens. And in his second go-round, he had the Tacit approval because he was still a popular guy even when he got ousted and he left. So the U.S. was like, all right, you're a useful pawn now. Let's partner together. But then they got tired of him and then whatever. Right, but again, that also
the Marines came in and kidnapped him.
Yeah,
the U.S. Marines fucking went into Haiti and kidnapped the fucking president.
Dude, listen. All of that is to say that nothing moves in Haiti without the tacit approval of the United States government. And once I see, first of all, the neighborhood that the guy lived in, the president lived in, this neighborhood called Pétionville, which is essentially a suburb of Port-au-Prince, the capital city of Haiti. Port-au-Prince is a city of 3 million people. Like, it's a fucking major metropolitan hub, essentially. It's the biggest, most concentrated population of people in the country. And Pétionville, I've been to Pétionville, right? Like, that's where you go when you want to go do like a pool resort shit for the day. Where you want to see some when you want to see some nice shit in Haiti, like nice shit that can compare to something that you might see in America, you go to Pétionville. Like, it's a rich neighborhood. It's a well-to-do upper class Haitian neighborhood. So once I hear that 8 trucks rolled through that neighborhood where rich people live, people with means, people with security, I already knew somebody of means, people of means had to be the ones to carry this thing out. Because yeah. Guess what? If a bunch of street dudes, the minute they show up, they getting shot at. Like, everybody knows the street dudes. Everybody knows what Haitians, what we call malheur is. Like, everybody knows the poor ghetto people of the community. You can't, they're not just going to stroll into the president's fucking crib and gun them down. That's not happening. So all of that is to say, this is just a war between the ruling classes of Haiti. The elites, some elites decided they didn't want this guy around anymore. They 100% had the tacit approval of the U.S. because you cannot do some shit like this to a guy that the U.S. fucks with. Because as you can see anywhere else, as we mentioned with Cuba, as we mentioned with Iran, et cetera, you don't just do that to the U.S.'s guy. Popular uprising or not, that's not fucking happening. So these people who carried out this assassination pay for it. I would bet everything in my bank account, they had the tacit approval of the American government. Like, all right, fuck it, take them out. We don't care. And so they did this, and that's what happened.
Well, Waz, were you shocked when you saw the report in the Daily Beast that said that several of the people who carried out the assassination were U.S. DEA informants? I did not see that.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
They were a lot of the people. So this was carried out by, like, commandos, like, not like this was not like a drive-by shooting. No. You know, these were like well-trained, like, if former you watch them, they're running officers, like, you know, Call of Duty style, you know, like they have that, like, crouch stance, like, while they're holding the guns, you know, like, they very highly trained commandos who apparently yelled that they were DEA as they were kind of running in. So all the guards were like, yeah, just go right through, you know, like, and then they off this guy, shot his wife, even though she survived. And it was a bunch of Colombians, apparently it was 26 Colombians, 2 Haitian Americans, one of whom used to work for Sean Penn, which is kind of just another weird quirk to this story. Mm-hmm. But they weren't, like you said, they weren't like street thugs. These guys were all hardened, you know, like special forces types, most of them Colombian, which is like a, you know, they all have tons of experience fighting the longest civil war, like, I think the longest ever. Yeah. So, like, all of them, you know, financed and trained by the United States as well. And then it comes out that these guys were hired. This was broken by the AP. These guys were hired out of a private security firm out of Miami.
You know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking. But I don't want to eat something that's bad for me, like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl.
I love the chicken pesto bowl!
Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
And I was like, what the fuck? You know, like you said, I don't think this was like Joe Biden calling up and being like,
It was like they got permission from whoever they liaise with when it comes to the government of like,
we'll look the other way.
We're thinking about doing this thing. All right. I ain't getting my hands dirty. Y'all do what y'all do, but we ain't like I'm sure the American government wasn't calling the shots, but they knew. You can't do something like this to a guy that the U.S. is backing. You just can't do it. They will fuck your shit up if you try to do something like that. So, of course, they got permission. And again, the people who have ruled Haiti forever, for decades, is this same bourgeoisie ruling class. And so they're going to have tensions amongst each other. Right. And, you know, I watched the segment that you did on Jacobin where it's like, yo, there's this like fucking street underbelly growing that this guy's not taking care of. He's trying to make himself president for longer. Like, fuck that shit. We're getting this dude out of there. And again, how you know there was some money behind it? Like, bro, 30 fucking dudes? Like even
in like 8 black Nissan Pathfinders.
If you want to say they probably got $1,000 each, or $1,500, or $2,000 each, like there's not a lot of people in Haiti that can just put together 60,000 G's, bro, to do some type of shit like this. Yes, that's not a lot of money in our parlance, but trust me, in the context of Haitian life, there's a very small amount of people. Who can not even if you have 60 G's yourself, you can put 60 G's together to do this, not to like, yo, build some shit or make a crazy crib or build a school. No, to just kill somebody, get somebody killed.
Yeah.
Like that's an extravagance. That's an extravagance for a country that has plenty of guns, plenty of people who shoot people like that. You could get to do it for like $200. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's an extravagance. That's how you know it came from the ruling elite.
And Vice has a 45-minute documentary that came out before this assassination was happening. But it was a documentary about the political crisis in Haiti. And I have my issues with Vice and all this stuff, but I think it's still worth watching the documentary because it describes the political crisis, which was basically, you know, there's been massive protests in Haiti for like 2 years. No one fucking liked this guy, but at the same time, because like shit is getting so bad in Haiti. There's been this kind of street gang alliance that has been forming called the G9, where like a bunch of different gangs kind of got together and like put aside their differences and are uniting, and they control as much as a third of Port-au-Prince. And I think that that's what's key to understanding here. You know, like it's that the local bourgeoisie was like, yo, you got to get this under control. And like he wasn't doing it, or, you know, he was unwilling or unable or whatever to get this kind of like rising violent power of the street gangs under control. So they were like, you got to go. He's got to get out of here. You know, he was trying to cling to one more year of power. And, you know, it's debatable whether he had like a legitimate claim to that or not. It doesn't really matter. The point is that they wanted him out and he wanted to stay for a year. And they're like, all right, fine. We'll take you out. It's a pretty fucking wild story, man.
Yeah. And again, the part where a private American security firm, which is just basically a private army, which I don't know why this isn't a bigger part of the discussion. Like the idea that we have private fucking armies for hire, like, and that shit is just cool. Like, I don't understand the concept of a private armies in America when we're spending $1 trillion a year on military. What are we spending it on?
Well, I mean, it's a transfer. I mean, what it is, it's a transfer of wealth from the public, you know, from the public taxpayer to private shareholders. I mean, is what it is. Producer Sean's telling us he's got some video on Haiti. Maybe it's worth him throwing it up.
Please play that.
Tonight, Haiti is a country under siege as the manhunt for the killers of President Moïse ramps up. More than a dozen captured in the last 24 hours, with at least 7 others killed. One of those arrested, a U.S. citizen from Florida, James Solage. Authorities still trying to figure out why a hit squad of roughly 24 men assassinated the president. Tonight, we're learning President Moïse was shot 12 times in the head and body. His wife shot 3 times, and their daughter survived only because she hid in a bedroom and managed to escape. Former Prime Minister Laurent Lamothe is calling for an international investigation.
This was a contracted hit to go in and kill the president, silence the president. We cannot wait. The world cannot wait. It's important for every Haitian's security and for the country's stability to get to those who have financed this assassination of the president.
Moïse had become increasingly unpopular for clinging to power after his term expired in February. Protesters had been demanding his resignation for months before he was killed. A new power struggle has begun. And in the Haitian capital, the fear is palpable.
What is going on? Because we do not understand the game on the ground. We do not know who the players are. We do not know what the purpose is. We do not know how it's going to influence the future of us now here today and my children. Because what we're living today is going to be dictating the future of my children.
A country so familiar with turmoil, now forced to endure a new crisis. Vladimir Dutier, CBS News, New York.
It's just a wild story. It's, you know, again, like, I think that the presence of these private contractors, I mean, and details are still coming out about them, but like, it seems like the guy who runs it is this Venezuelan guy out of Miami. And he's the same guy that Richard Branson hired to do his security for the concert that he did on the border between Colombia and Venezuela. I don't know if you remember that. That was all like a fucking CIA operation, pretty obviously, like that Richard Branson financed, and this guy did the private security for it. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a lot of smoke there. I mean, these guys were all federal informants. They were, you know, working out of Miami. I don't know. It just seems pretty crazy. I mean, I'll remind people that just last year, another private security company out of South Florida was hired to do a coup d'etat in Venezuela.
They were a lot less successful than these cats.
A lot less successful than these cats for various reasons. It looks like the guys that they hired were much bigger jokers. It looks like these guys are fucking serious, like hardened, you know, mercenaries. You know, they hired Colombians instead of Americans, which means that they're just more, you know, they're harder. But and also just the Haitian state is much weaker than Venezuela, which is a much more militarized state. You know, just has much more robust ability to defend itself than the Haitian president, who, you know, for all we know, the Haitian security services were also like, this guy's got to go.
Yeah. Who knows who else was in on this shit for sure. Like, just the idea that you would let these fools in to the compound of the fucking president of the country just because they said they
walked in.
But that's just unacceptable. You know, but again, you know, as with anything else, the results of the country can be blamed on nobody else but the people who make the decisions. And that's the American government and that's the Haitian elites. They're to blame for all of this shit. There's no two ways about it. And, you know, I mentioned the Clintons before. Nando and his Jacobin piece mentioned the food dumping programs that Clinton spearheaded, which he admitted was a whole unmitigated fucking disaster. Hillary Clinton was part of quashing a minimum wage hike from $3 a workday to $5 a workday at Levi's manufacturing plants. Levi's couldn't afford to pay those Haitians $5 a day. Come on, Nando. Just deplorable, just disgusting. But yeah, you know, as with everything else, people always say, you know, that's what the right wing will always say, or like certain type of libertarian or arch capitalist would be like, oh, you want to blame everybody else for your problems. It's like, no, like there really are the people to blame for the problems, though.
When you have the most powerful people in the world with the boot on your neck.
They're the ones to blame. Yeah. So, you know, when you guys are watching the things in the news that are going on in Haiti and Cuba, I hope that we were able to provide a certain type of context. That's our show for today. My man Nando is going to be on vacation next week, going to Spain, España. Can you tell us what you plan on doing? How long are you going to be in Spain? What's going on?
Be there about 11 days. I'm going to Madrid, Barcelona, and a little island called Ibiza.
I am so
listening to the Venga Boys. You know, we're going to Ibiza with the Venga Boys and we're gonna party. It's gonna be great.
I love it. I'm very jealous of you, very happy for you. But we will have an episode next week. Don't worry, it's not gonna skip a beat. But yes, Nando, enjoy your vacation. Thank you, producer Sean. Thank you for everybody who listens to the show, support us. Make sure you subscribe to the Woke Bros feed. Listen to the individual feed, please. Everywhere you get your podcasts, patreon.com/countthedings. Make sure you become a Patreon if you have the chance to. We're out of here, y'all. Peace.
Later.